All right, we've got a lot to cover today. Let's get started. Elsa, we're going to come straight to you. We're at the point now, part two of the workflow for Destination Wedding. So you had your couple contact you. You went through the consultation. You did the proposal. They picked an option. They're ready to go. Before we start talking about deposits and getting the guest booked, you've probably got a decision to make about whether you're going to work with a tour operator to do this booking, or you're going to go direct. Now, to stress to everybody on the call, you run your own business, you pick your own path about whether you're going to go with tour operators all the time, direct to resorts and cruise lines all the time, or a mix. Elsa, would you share with us how do you approach that question and what do you do?
Well, the first thing I do is I examine a couple of elements involving the group process. So, for example, I want to know what are the group rates. Obviously, if they're too high and they're not competitive, then my wedding couple is not going to be happy. So I look at the group rates. I look at the amenities and the attrition dates. The attrition dates are basically the penalties. How long do they have to pay before penalties apply? As well as what is the deposit going to be like with the supplier versus going direct. And then I also look at the group administration part. So is it going to be easier for me to administer this group? Is it a dashboard that I'm going to receive, or do I have to do everything on my own? Am I able to add flight and transfers easily, or do I have to select those separately? And then the last thing that I'm going to be looking at, well, not quite the last thing, close to the last thing I'm going to be looking at is the group amenities. Am I going to be getting for every fifth room, for example, the sixth room is free? Am I going to be getting credits towards the group? Sometimes our suppliers offer a bigger bundle of group amenities than going direct. I'm also going to be looking at whether or not do they have travel insurance that covers that I can easily add to the package, as well as, of course, my commission rate.
Okay, great. It occurs to me in the rush to get started with questions, I should introduce you guys first. How about that? You see, you just heard from Elsa Davis. Elsa is the owner of ESD Travels, and she has a sub-brand, an amazingly beautiful, achingly beautiful website for Destination Weddings, Signature Weddings Away, based in New Jersey. And she has a Fortune 500 corporate background. Elsa, tell us just a moment about how you got involved in romance travel.
Well, I actually was a former bride. My destination wedding specialist convinced me over the year-long process to become a travel agent. And at first I said no, because I had a corporate job. But then I got pregnant and life changed. And I could no longer do my corporate job because I was on bed rest. And when I called her to announce the great news that I'm having or expecting a little one, she's like, "Well, now I see you have plenty of time. So why don't you give this a try?" And I've been a travel advisor ever since.
Great story. All right, thank you. Cheryl, before I throw that same question to you, let me mention Cheryl Bailey is the owner of Yellow Umbrella Events in the Austin, New Braunfels area of Texas. And she and her husband, Shay, have grown an amazing agency in Texas. I won't mention the brand name, but for one particular resort brand, I believe they are still the number one producing agency in the world among travel agencies for this company. Cheryl, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Happy to
And
be
let me throw that question to you. What do you do about the tour operator slash going direct question?
Okay, well, it's first helpful to know that my particular travel-related business focuses fairly exclusively on groups and group contracts. So just so you know that anything that I share with you today is going to be really highly directed towards the group business. I have very little FIT business, and the FIT business that I do looks very different. We primarily do all-inclusive resorts in Mexico for groups, and then I do a bunch of FIT river cruises. Very, very different. So it might be different based on what you do, as John has kind of said earlier. But for all-inclusive resorts, I almost always book through a tour operator if I can help it. I know, as Elsa had said, like there's some things you might want to check and verify and compare together. But all things being the same or very close, I would prefer to work through a tour operator. I might book direct if the comps for the couple are significantly different or so much better if I did a direct booking, but I just greatly prefer the security and convenience of booking through a reliable tour operator, that I already know and love. I know they're going to have my back when something goes wrong, and something eventually will go wrong, no matter how great your relationship is with the resort and how much you love your BDM and how wonderful the resort is. Something will go wrong eventually, and you need support. For river cruise FITs and groups, weirdly, I almost always book those direct. So completely opposite. Rarely go through a tour operator on those. It's just really, it's terrible to say, but I just simply have more confidence in things like, getting paid and having solid support from the river cruise lines. If you know anything about that industry, they're very supportive of the agents, than I do with all-inclusive resorts in Mexico. So, kind of going back to that relationship that you have with the resort or your BDM, there's one particular resort, as John was mentioning. I don't care if you know it's Hotel Xcaret, that I have a really fantastic relationship with. I am the largest seller of groups in the world to this property. I love this resort. I love these people. I know all the people there. I book millions and millions of dollars with them a year. But there have been a couple of times that I needed to get the TO involved to help me manage situations that I simply was not getting a resolution from on the resort's end. And having that TO support greatly helped escalate the situation and then helped finalize, the things that I needed done so we can kind of, put a lid on that and help us to be able to move forward with helping my client. And just, I feel like there are some resorts where you just are not going to get the support that you need when something actually does go wrong. Like, everyone's great when everything's great. It's a big difference when everything's not great and what happens. So for that reason, with, again, depending upon what you do, I usually work with a TO if I can, unless it's really specifically different on the all-inclusive resort side and on river cruises, I go direct because they are more supportive from agents or for agents.
Yeah, makes sense. Folks, a big takeaway before we go on to other questions. We always recommend to our members that you really talk with your consortium, your host agency, if you have one, go through the preferred supplier list, all of those favorite suppliers that your consortium, your host agency has. Make sure you pick at least one tour operator to work with, and then take a look at the resort companies, the brands that you think you'll sell most often, depending on what part of the country you're in or the brands you're most comfortable with. Pick three of those. Get their wedding package brochures, links to their pages that describe their packages, their services, their policies for wedding groups, and learn those three suppliers' policies. And that way, as you're working with couple after couple after couple, as your business grows, you're concentrating your bookings with your preferred suppliers. That's going to build a better relationship working wise with those companies. And also, it's going to raise your commissions over time because you're going to be getting those overrides in some cases from working with your preferreds. So let's move on. Of all the questions we're going to tackle today, we're about to jump into the big one, contracts. And we're going to spend a little bit of time on this today because from working with new members, year in and year out, this is one area that we find we get the most questions on. If you've worked with groups before, you know there are room block or cabin block contracts, but it gets a little dicier with wedding groups because there's also a wedding date contract involved. So I want to give you 30 seconds of background here, and I'm going to go back to Cheryl first and then Elsa and ask them to walk us through how they deal with these contracts. It changes supplier to supplier, but typically there are three main contracts with an average destination wedding. A lot of us start with the wedding date contract, which locks in the date of the wedding and sometimes the package, the ceremony package, not always, but sometimes, but especially most importantly, the wedding date. So we can get the date locked in and we're not going through all the steps of putting the room block together to find out later the wedding date the couple wants a year from now is not even available. So that's first. And usually the couple and the resort company, the supplier, will sign that. And then you, as the agent, will work with the supplier, whether it's the tour operator or if you're going direct to the resort or the cruise line. Then you're going to work on the room or cabin block contract to get the rooms set aside. Typically, your agency and the supplier will sign that contract. Right before you put your name on that dotted line, you're going to turn around and do a third agreement between the couple and you, where they're going to take on the financial responsibility for the rooms. There's so much more to talk about with contracts. We have several webinar videos in our training library that go into super great detail about this topic. We got about 10 minutes today to cover it. So I'm going to go back to Cheryl. Cheryl, my gosh, I can't imagine between Elsa and you how many thousands of contracts you guys have worked with over the years. Well, can you walk us through when you're at the point of contracting with a wedding couple? How do you go through all this?
So contracts can be very scary. I actually love contracts. I think I used to be afraid of them many years ago until I actually got into room block. So I used to be an event planner prior. And I don't know, there's something about a room block contract. I love it. I love all the elements of it. I love explaining it. I love sharing the information. And so I would advise that you get to know and love your contract. Like just know it inside out where you can describe it without even looking at it and you all know all the terms. Talk with your attorney. I actually have two. I have one that's a travel specific attorney, and then I have a business attorney that works with small businesses in Texas. I kind of recommend that. So if you can get two of them, that's amazing. One that is exclusively knowledgeable of your industry and one that is knowledgeable of your state laws because that's different. So, as John kind of talked about the process, that's exactly the process we follow. But I do want to point out that we have a very specific room block contract that is exclusively from our company. It's exclusively from Yellow Umbrella Events. It goes to the couple or the company or whoever the group leader is that we're working with. I work, and this is not an endorsement. I'm sure that John might get all over me for this, but I'm going to tell you, I work with Classic for my room block contracts. They're a supplier that I love. They've done very good by me. You might love someone else, that's totally fine. Go with who you love. But I work with them a lot. I will use them as an example here. Obviously, Classic Vacations has a contract they want me to sign, and I'll sign that independently, but I am never sending that contract to the client. There are things I want in my contract that Classic doesn't have in their contract. And those things protect me and my business and provide clarity to the client and myself. So I am not taking Classic's contract and simply forwarding it to the client and having them sign it ever, ever, ever. I know a lot of people do that. I would highly advise that you never, ever do that. We have our own independent contract, or our own independent room block contract that every client signs. It's kind of like a contract, room block contract and service agreement. It clearly lays out things like what exact services are being provided to the client because we are providing a service as well. It's not just the room block. It's not just, the little grid that you send over. We're providing specific services to the client, and your contract should lay out those specific services that you're providing to the client. Our contract has that. It has, of course, the room block details. We have payment terms along with cancellation, postponement, force majeure details, which we'll talk about later. That came up for me today. But beyond that, there are certain rules and laws that each state has regarding contracts. So your state might have different rules and laws for contracts than, my state. So both of us might have something different going on. So you need your own independent contract that lays out the terms, those terms and what's legal for your state and your business situation as well. Kind of as John alluded to, we don't get in between the resort and the client when it comes to their wedding date contract or their wedding package contract. We definitely facilitate that. We start from the beginning, help them choose a resort, get them connected with the resort. They, finalize their date before they sign that contract. I make for sure that rooms are actually available for their date. And then once we feel confident, then of course the client signs the contract with the resort. And then we come in and secure their room block. So the only thing I will say about that is that's how a majority of things work. Now, Hotel Scarlett, the resort I work with a lot, that order is completely flipped. In order to be able to work with them, they make you have a room block contract in place, signed, deposited, done before they will even send the wedding date contract. So it's a very unusual situation. It works really well though. So it's really important that you talk with your resort or ship or whoever you're working with to make for sure that you fully understand how they operate as well. Those of you that work with AIC, for example, they have a little different way they operate on being able to request your room block. So just make for sure you're communicating with the tour operator with the resort to make for sure that obviously rooms are available, that the date that your client wants is available. And once they have all of that and they sign the contract, then the work really starts. One last thing I will tell you about contracts, and again, something that came up today is these people will sue you. You're a business, and your business needs to protect itself with a contract. I was just reading in a Facebook group a couple days ago that an attorney client, an attorney guest of a wedding actually threatened to sue the travel agent because he wanted a swim up room and there was no swim up room available by the time he booked. So he quite literally was threatening to sue the agent because he couldn't get the room he wanted. It's so crazy. But the bottom line is she actually had to get an attorney to then start working to help herself in this situation. So she had to pay money out of her pocket just because she's being threatened by an attorney. And you will, like there's sometimes you will have to do that. And then a lot of times people are like, well, they can't sue you for that. Look, someone can sue you for anything. It's up to you to prove whether it's legitimate or not and whether you win or not. So just know that these things are really, really important. Just using the supplier's contract is not going to cut it. Just today, I also was threatened with a lawsuit from a bride who wants to cancel her wedding because she now says her guests are nervous about traveling to Mexico and she wants full cancellation, all of her money back for myself and the resort because, force majeure. I'm like, that's not how that works, sweetie. And so then we have to go from there. But you just do not fully appreciate how much a contract covers you until you need it. So I know I rambled on that and I do apologize. Elsa, all you.
Also, what about you?
So I do have a legal background. So contracts, I agree completely with Cheryl. You want to have your own contract. So I'll just kind of walk you through the process that we do here at Signature Weddings Away. The first step is a service agreement. We do a service agreement separately before we even start proposing any resorts or providing a proposal at all. And one of the main reasons is exactly what Cheryl brought out. If the wedding group decides to cancel, the fee that we charge for our services and assisting them, it's written very plainly that that is non-refundable, and we explain why. The fact of the matter is as soon as we start sending out those proposals, we're already working for you. You're already receiving our services. Whether you actually proceed with your wedding or not, those services are non-returnable. So we do the service fee between myself and the client. Then the next thing we do is we assist them with their wedding contract. You'll find that a lot of the wedding offices do not want the travel advisor in between themselves and the client. So we will introduce them to the wedding coordinator on site or via a phone, and we will assist them with filling out the paperwork as much as we can. But we do advise our clients that that is a contract directly between themselves and the resort. And then we go for their room block agreement. Some of the things that we do insert into our contract that you will not find between yourself and the resort or cruise line is things like mutual termination. So I've had some instances where I've had to fire brides. And the one thing that may be misconstrued by our wedding couples is that they believe that they own the room block, that they can separate your business or, for example, Signature Weddings Away from the agreement with the resort for the room block. But as we all know, that's not true. And we actually make that agreement with our suppliers directly, or AKA the resort or cruise line. So in case the wedding couple does decide to, quote unquote, fire us, they no longer have access to that room block. So in our agreement with the client, we write that out so that they have that in writing and understand that clearly, as well as we take the time to make sure we backdate. So a lot of the times, when you get a contract, it's going to give you a particular date when attrition and penalties actually occur. And because we want to protect ourselves, we never give the client the actual due date. We always backdate it by at least 7 to 10 days, just in case there's a cancellation that happens. We don't want to have to be worried about having the full liability financially on ourselves in case the client does not like to pay or want to pay. Some other items that we do include in there is, again, we reiterate that the wedding couple is indeed responsible for the entire room block and also for any chargebacks that their guests may request. So we've had plenty of times where the guests cut up, they go on the trip, and then they come back home and they request a chargeback because they say they didn't like the bedding in the resort. And so one way for us to protect ourselves is to make sure that the wedding couple knows that in case that is to happen, if there are any monies that they were expecting to get back as an amenity, or if we have to charge their credit card outright, they're agreeing that they are responsible for all of those rooms and any penalties or chargebacks that occur or may occur in that event. And typically, when the wedding couple is involved, usually the guests behave much better. And so, yeah, again, I would definitely strongly agree with Cheryl that you definitely want to have your own contract. Definitely use a travel attorney to review the contract for legality and to make sure that it is suitable for the state that you're in. And again, don't share the true due dates with your wedding couple.
That's great. Great advice from both of you. And for all the agents who are listening in, I think you pick up right away that contracting is something to really focus on as you're getting started in this niche. Now, for our members, we have 850 members right now across the USA, Canada, some other countries. We have sample contracts, destination wedding specific contracts in our resource center that members can use. And so, if you decide to join us down the road, you can take advantage of those. There are a lot of clauses that our two speakers today have mentioned, everything from chargebacks to bad behavior from that odd guest who gets a little too drunk at the reception, everything in between. We've with 850 of us, we've somebody in our group has seen just about everything that could happen with a destination wedding. So over the years, we've developed a lot of language that helps cover these contract disputes that might come up. So just be aware we've got those samples for you there. Now, let me switch gears a bit and focus in on one part of putting the contract together with a room block or a cabin block, and that's the numbers. So, Elsa, I'll come back to you first and then Cheryl. So, Elsa, I'm a blushing bride and I've been working great with you so far, and we're getting ready now to, request the room block from the resort, and you ask me, as a good travel agent would, how many people are on my guest list. And I'm going to tell you, I have 200 people on my guest list. And like a good agent, you're going to say, well, how many do you think are going to be coming? And I'm going to tell you, well, they're all good friends of mine. So all 200 are going to show up. And both Cheryl and you know that it's going to be. If I'm lucky, it's going to be 100. It's probably 80. It could be 50 out of 200. So, how do you work with your brides to help them come up with a reasonable number that you're ultimately going to give the supplier to put in the room block count?
Well, I educate them, right? So, as you alluded, we all know that 200 people are not coming on this wedding. typically, we see, in my case, I typically see about a 40% of those invited that actually attend. So, I normally would give them tell them about the 40%, and then we add 5 just in case. We don't want to take advantage of holding too many rooms from our suppliers. They don't like that. But we also don't want to be in a place where we book too less of rooms and then we end up not having enough for the wedding group to attend. So 40% plus 5 is usually my sweet number. I also assist them with sending out RSVPs as we're getting ramped up for the contract. So once they've selected the venue or the resort or cruise line that they're going to go with, we immediately get that guest list together and we send out the RSVPs. And this helps me solidify my reason for why we're booking only about 40% plus the 5 rooms. And it makes the wedding couple feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that worst case scenario, if we have more people that needs rooms, I can always go back to the supplier and ask them to add back to the contract. And then also it helps them to understand that if we need to reduce rooms, we have a particular window of time typically that we can do so without penalty. So by educating the wedding couple and giving them the statistics and the facts with their contract and allowing them to actually have those RSVPs sent to their guests in advance, it helps us to actually get a room block that is more suitable for them.
Okay. Cheryl, what about you?
Very, very similar to Elsa. So I'm not even going to go over that again because she's already said exactly what you need to tell your clients. Is that saying that everyone's coming is not reasonable and it's not going to happen. And so we do have a little formula for that, very similar. We have them break down their guests into A, B, and C, absolutely going to be there, definitely not coming, and the maybes. And we kind of have a formula for that. So since she's already covered that, let's talk about something a little bit deeper into this. And that is what room categories and how do you structure the room block itself to fit the guests? So our company, my team might be in a different situation than some of you, and that might be new. I don't know if everyone here is new to this or if you've been doing this for many years, but probably like Elsa, like we've facilitated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of contracts for room blocks at this point. So I have an extended database of stats and information that some of you may not have. And what my team does is we keep a running spreadsheet of the exact room categories that are booked at specific resorts. And these are not what they hold, but what is hard booked, closed, paid for once it's all said and done, what their guests actually booked. It lists the exact room categories for each resort, the number of nights that people typically stay, things of that nature. So with that, it's very easy for me to tell a client, look, I know exactly what your guests are going to book because I've done, 400 contracts at this one resort, and I can give you exact percentages of what's going to book, and then we'll talk about it afterwards and see which one of us is right. in a nice way. But it's very easy for me to look at a client now and go, look, I have the stats to back this up, and I know you think everyone is just going to book a garden suite, but I know that's not realistic. And so with those stats, I'm able to come to the resorts, come to the TO, come to the client with a much more thoughtful room block, as we say, that's realistic and indicative of actual guest behavior. Now we do get a lot of pushback on this. We do get couples that are like, no, like I know my guests, like they're only going to book the garden suites, they're just going to choose the cheapest room. But the thing is, they're not, because not all of someone's guests live in the same house, and none of them drive the same car, and not all of them eat at the same restaurant. So by very virtue of human nature, they're not all going to order a garden suite. Some people would die if they were in the garden suite because they can't roll with anything but the presidential suite, or they're going to be embarrassed. Some people are going to go with the cheapest possible option, and there's a lot of middle ground there. So those of you that don't have that big one, if you do have a lot of groups that you've done, go back and start looking at that information so you have real numbers, not what you think, but then you have real numbers and real stats. And two, if you don't have that, ask questions. Talk to your TO and say, look, can you tell me, because they have the stats, I assure you. Can you tell me what are the most common booked categories at this resort? Can you tell me, for weddings, because sometimes corporate books something different. So talk to your TO, talk to your resort. Now, a lot of resorts are going to want you to hold a room block of all lead-in categories and nothing else. Some of them will push back on this to you and really push you to do this. And I'm here to tell you, push back on this. This is a disservice to your client, but it's a huge disservice to you. You're going to spend so much time going back to the resort going, oh, well, do you have a river suite? Well, do you have a swim up? Do you have a suite for these days? And that back and forth is very frustrating to guests. Don't put yourself in that situation. But the other big thing about that is that some guests won't even know that they have an option of requesting other categories. They're just going to book that cheapest room. What happens to your commission when all the people in the group book the cheapest room? It's the lowest. But if you have a good variety of things, from a business perspective, that is a great way to increase your commission. So you not only are increasing your commission and your business, but you're absolutely doing right by your client and their guests by having a variety of what they actually will book. So it's not just, super selfish, and it's not also altruistic either. You're really kind of writing both of those here, and that you are doing a positive thing for your guests and a positive thing for yourself. The cheapest room categories and the highest room categories tend to sell out the fastest at the resorts. So you want to make for sure that you have those. We actually do have our guests send out in advance kind of an email. A lot of times they'll use a Google form to check in with people to say, hey, like, do you already know what rooms you want? So there's some things that we do in advance also, because sometimes people surprise me. So I'm just saying, don't settle for all lead-in room categories, and ask a lot of questions, because you want to have room blocks that actually make sense for the reality of how people book. And people do not just book the cheapest room, even if that's what the couple or the group leader think.
Well, tons of great advice there. Helping your couples put the best face forward on their room blocks is a really critical part of being their destination wedding specialist. So take those tips away. Remember, you're going to have access to the video today, so you can go back and pick up these tips. Anything you might have missed, you can listen back again and do that. We have lots of other training that we do throughout the year on destination weddings for our members. You may find it a little odd that we haven't had a commercial about being a member of our association. We're an agent-run group. We'd love to have you join, but we have a special arrangement with one of our instructors who is offering a credit on your behalf for you to join. So hang tight. We're going to give you information after the course is over that will save you some money, because she's going to contribute a portion of your dues for the next year. So we're not doing any commercials about that. We'll tell you how to join later, and you can get more of those resources. And a quick note too, before we go on to the next question, a big thanks again to our friends at AIC Hotel Group for making all this possible. Now, Cheryl, I think it's back to you first here, and then Elsa. Cheryl, we've got the contract, all that stuff, all that's out of the way. And now it's time to let the guest know. What's the plan? We know the dates probably as guests by this point, but we don't know what the resort is. We don't know a lot of resort details. We don't know the room categories, et cetera, et cetera. How do you typically help the couple announce the travel details to the guest? Do you do like a Zoom call like this one with the guest? Do you help them put a wedding website together? Do you just send out emails? What steps do you follow to announce the trip details out to the guest?
So, I think I just kind of was starting to talk about that in the last question. So, we actually do recommend that our couples contact all of their intended guests before they even finalize their destination wedding date and their wedding contract. Because, look, the biggest reason is that not everyone can logistically have that destination wedding of their dreams. Some resorts require minimums. Some resorts have very specific requirements for, like, who has to stay on site and how many and percentages. Certain resorts require a certain amount of rooms for the day of the week. And you really can't have a destination wedding at one of these resorts, and you shouldn't be signing a contract for one if you don't feel super confident that you're actually going to be able to hit those minimums. You're not going to sign those contracts basically if you don't have the buy-in from your guests. So we typically like our clients to get at least that solid buy-in from at least the people that they could not possibly imagine getting married without, because sometimes we'll have couples and group leaders that are like, well, I don't want to contact everyone, or I don't want to tell people just yet. And I'm like, okay, but you want to tell your wedding party, you want to tell your parents, you want to tell your best friend. You would need at least need to know that those, like, 20 people that you can't imagine getting married without can and will make it, because sometimes couples will be all in on a destination wedding, and then they book the date and start planning, and ultimately find out that, like, half or more of their friends and family are just not going to support them, and they're not going to book a room, and very specific key people they can't imagine getting married without are not going to come to their wedding. So I would much rather someone simply not book their wedding and not sign those contracts in advance and stop in the beginning of the process than be all in and ultimately have to cancel, which is exactly what's happening with one of my clients right now. She did not get the buy-in. They did not follow the steps. And now they're in a situation where they just can't have their wedding. So we recommend that the couple send out a preemptive email, a Google form, letting them know that they're thinking of having a destination wedding and any bit of information they have. If they know what resort they want, they need to let them know. If they know a roundabout idea of pricing, they need to let them know. If they have dates, anything that they feel super confident about, I always tell them, add it. Let these people know. You can't be, too transparent. And that at least gives them a starting point on whether a destination wedding is even going to work for them. And once that's finalized, then they'll feel very confident in moving forward. And it just helps a lot of unease and distress that otherwise might have been caused by not being prepared. So that's kind of how we start that.
Okay. Elsa, what about you?
So I love everything that Cheryl just said. I think that talking with their guests is very important in the beginning stages, even just to build up that enthusiasm, and getting them excited to get the details. And just a side note, for those clients that they don't get enough guest activity or actively saying yes, they're going to go, instead of doing a traditional group contract, you can always do a non-traditional promo code instead. So that allows them to continue to have their wedding as a destination wedding, but with a smaller amount of people. So no biggie, everything is not all loss. They can still go, but again, you'll just switch it from contract to promo code. But getting back to how do we assist the guests? How do we assist the wedding couple to notify and have the guests book? So we try to do everything hands-on. So we send out the RSVPs as soon as we get the guest list. So they already are being engaged from the beginning before we even sign the contract. We also encourage our wedding couples to send out a text because a lot of people don't look at emails now. So we encourage the wedding couple, hey, just send out the text and let them know that plans are in the works, details are coming soon. And we also advise them no matter what resort, we always advise them to advise their guests that it'll be about $150 to $200 that they're going to need to deposit for their room. So then that way, the guests can at least start getting their deposit money ready. Next, we actually do provide them with a landing page. This landing page is their booking landing page. So I know a lot of wedding couples like to have their wedding website. We will give them a link that they can put onto their wedding website, but we create their booking landing page, take a picture from them. We try to tailor it so that it fits their wedding's website if they have one. And then on there, we do a meet and greet email. So we introduce ourselves. For myself or my IC, we introduce them with a picture, let them know who we are so they can build that trust factor. And then we also give them the rates, the ability to actually reserve the room, choose which room that they want with pictures. As well as with pricing. So we kind of keep it very streamlined. And then at the time that they select their room, they're actually able then to put down their deposit. And then there's one thing I missed. Before we give the booking link out, we actually do create an invitation for them. It's an email invitation, so it's not physical, but that invitation then goes out to all of those who are RSVPs. And it allows them to again get introduced to to Signature Weddings Away, and then allows them to have access to that booking link.
Very good. Folks, some good takeaways there. Remember, a lot of consumers nowadays don't always read email. So making sure that the message is going out, text, Facebook group, different methods. And that kind of leads us into the next step here, which is actually starting to take the literal reservations from guests. And Elsa, I'll come back to you first and then go to Cheryl. So we've blasted out all the information about the trip, all the details, and now it's time to take in those reservations. What tools do you use to actually do the reservations? Do you use invoice forms that your CRM makes possible? Do you work with a tour operator like Classic that sometimes will have booking pages or booking links that you can give out to clients? When we're talking about actually processing the guest reservations, what methods or tools do you use to do the reservations themselves?
Well, I used to do just a basic CRM where we would send out through email, they would fill out a form, and then I would process it individually and send them back a quote and so on and so forth. I'm kind of really relieved that those days are over. I now use a CRM where everything again is all one and done. So literally, I build one page, I list all of the rooms that are available by quantity. So when that room type sells out, or that room category sells out, it is no longer selectable for the client or the guest to choose from, which helps me keep my room allotment in line. It gives them the pricing. It tells them by per room or by occupancy how much that is going to be. And then it allows them to make their deposit. Now, I still have to take the deposit and physically process it with the supplier's website, but having the ability to do the one and done, you look, you book, you send in your money all in one place. It makes it a lot easier. And so again, I streamline it. Now, I do know, like, for example, Classic ALG, they do allow for you to build a website where you can just send out the link and the guest can literally book and pay directly to the supplier's site. I don't do that. I know a lot of agents that do, but there's two reasons why I prefer to actually process it myself. The first reason is because in my model, I do charge a service fee to each guest. And I'm a little frugal. I don't want to pay 10% out of my own service fee to the suppliers. And then the major reason why I do process it myself is because I feel like these are prospective clients of mine for the future. So I want to actually establish and know who they are, and I want to be able to build a rapport with each guest. I feel like it helps with my referral business. And again, if I'm building rapport with them, even if it's just a phone call to answer a question or just being able to send that confirmation email directly to them from me, I feel like it helps me with my future client base.
Okay. All right. Good. Cheryl, how do you also, along with Elsa, process thousands of guest reservations a year. How do you process those?
So, probably much like Elsa, we put together a one-page booking link for our couples or group leaders and their guests. And then that one-page booking link has all the like details of the resort, the room block, the rooms that are available in the block, the pricing, the payment dates, the deadlines, all the, travel insurance, all the things that a guest needs to know in that one page. Now, this is not replacing a wedding website. If a couple wants a wedding website, they need to make their own. It seems like Elsa creates one for them. I do not. I am not in that part of it. The wedding website's about the wedding, it's not about the room block. So we have this one link that they can add to their wedding website if they want. They can send it by text, they can email it. I recommend they send it lots of different ways, but they can go and get all the information they need about making a reservation and the resort and transportation, all those details in one spot. And then when they're ready to book, they just click the link on that page and make their reservation. Now, like Elsa, I also do not let Classic or any TO make the reservation on my behalf. And what she's talking about is that some tour operators will have a system set up where you can just send their link and they'll let the guest, make the reservation on that link. And then it's done, it's paid. You don't have to handle anything. I think that's a fantastic system. It just doesn't work for me. I want to see it, I want to review it. Like Elsa said, we're providing a service. I want to be able to step in when I see some issues that might be popping up. I like to have that control of it. It is more time consuming, so that is a downfall because you're quite literally kind of retyping that information, making that payment on their behalf on the TO's portal or the resort's portal. But you have it, you own it. I own that website. They're coming to my website, my link, not the TO's. I want to own that. I want that SEO. I want that client. I want them to come to me. So because of that, again, we use that. Now, this is kind of current slash future thinking, but because that's so time consuming, and for those of you that are thinking like, I don't have time for that, you will run out of time for that. You'll need to hire someone eventually if you do any kind of volume that does that. Now, we are also now building an AI agent. I know super futuristic of us, but we're building an AI agent that can quite literally take those reservations as they come in, log in to the TO's website, make those reservations, do the payments, and then just we get an email like, hey, this reservation's been made. Now, that is different than the TO doing it because still we are doing it and we can set up parameters. An issue with utilizing the TO's page is let's just say someone wants to come to the resort 2 days earlier or stay 2 days after. If that is not literally in your block, for most of the TOs, they won't, that reservation won't go through and the client will keep getting like, in essence, like an error, or it'll be telling you there's no rooms there. So when that happens, it tells the client, the guest, oh, there's no more rooms for me. I'll just go book with the resort. Or, you know, I see it on the resort's website. So the reason, that's one of the big reasons that we want to manage and control that, because I want to be the provider of information. I want to be the provider of the service. So we put that together for them. I just want them to be in communication with my team. And I want to be able to give regular updates to the client and say, here's where you are, here's what's going on, you know, here's what's happening with this situation. You're having people type in all kinds of crazy notes, like, oh, by the way, my girlfriend's coming, but don't add her to my room block. And then you're like, or don't add her to my room. And then you're like, oh, wait, what do you mean? And so then we can like preemptively take care of some of those things. Like, I'm sorry, babe, she's not just sneaking in. So there's just so many things you can kind of catch in this process when you do it. So, and obviously, we use a CRM for that. Up to date, we have been using Traveljoy. Again, not a an advertisement for Traveljoy, not supporting or telling you should use them. That's what we started with. I will tell you that if you have any kind of high volume, that that maybe that is not the place that you should start. If you have, you know, dreams of lots of volume, because there are some limitations with Traveljoy for us. We are literally in the middle, almost finished, of having custom build our own CRM through Zoho that literally mimics and follows our exact process. So we're not trying to like, you know, fit what we do into Traveljoy's format, or there's a million vacation CRM or all the different ones out there. We know our format and we can quite literally create an entire software system that's designed specifically for us and how we do things, and it makes it a lot faster. So that's what we're doing right now and we'll be moving over. But you know, again, the same thing with Elsa. I'm sure that's where her CRM is probably where she manages invoices and you know, lets people know what payments are left and keeps track of all of that. So I mean, I actually wrote notes on this because there was a lot to say on this. So my last thing, and I'll sign off on it, do not put this off. Start with a CRM from the beginning, or at least have a very detailed process that you follow every single time. This is where you get caught up, is when you don't have a distinctive, specific process that you follow exactly every single time. Because when you do follow something every single time exactly, you'll always know, I didn't miss that. I didn't forget that. If someone later is like, oh my God, did you send me this? You can 100% be like, yes, of course I sent you that. That's part of my process. That's built into my CRM. I've set it up that way. So a CRM, no matter what you do, I would not recommend building your own from the beginning. That's a lot of money and really tough. Use something that's available and go from there. But it is absolutely crucial for running any travel business, particularly groups that are so logistics heavy.
If you don't mind me adding to that, John, I love what you said about setting up your CRM. For those of you who have not gotten your first group, this is the time to do all your foundational work. I've had to change my CRM once, and that's because I upgrade. Well, I don't want to say upgraded because they were really good too, but this one is just a little bit more modern, and allowing me to do everything at once. Again, like Cheryl, I'm not trying to push a company particularly, but I use Turn. And so with Turn, it helps me to streamline a lot. But being that I moved from one CRM to the next, I've had to bring over all those automations and all of my string of emails. And yes, you do want to utilize automations as much as possible so that one, it is sending out the confirmations when people book, it's sending out the reminders for when they need to pay. And also that is, and I think you're going to get to this question next, so I'm not going to jump too far ahead, but it also sends out automations for yourself as far as your task.
And
That's
man,
great.
a CRM after you've already started one is like the end of the world, let me tell you.
We're glad to have the example of you guys going through that so we can follow you as our volume grows. Excuse me. Let's wrap up with the final question here. And Cheryl, I think it comes to you. Handling the paperwork for things like reminders about interim payments or sending out confirmations of payments, receipts. What tool do you use to do that?
It's all still through our CRM. I would highly recommend getting a CRM that has multiple capabilities and functionality so that you can keep track of reservations, do invoicing, send receipts, send payment details, and all of that. And you have full tracking in it. And that also is on our CRM. Elsa, is that what you do as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I heavily rely on my CRM because once you're working with such a volume of groups, there's no way that you can rightfully remember all of the due dates, the attrition dates, the small things to add. So for example, you may need to double check and make sure that you asked for a scooter for the cruise for the family, the mother-in-law. And so I use my CRM not just to send out the automations automatically when things are done, as far as payments being received or payment reminders. I also send out the automations to say things like, hey, we need your flight information. Hey, we need you, if you booked a flight with us, you might want to go in now. Now is the time to go in and upgrade your seat if you want to select a different seat or to add a seat. Now is your time to, receive your travel documents, for example. We have an automation that actually sends out the travel documents. So I do live by my CRM in that way, as well as I also have it remind me of certain tasks that I need to do. So it also reminds me and sends me emails like, okay, did you check to make sure that you're doing your final accounting? Things of that nature. So, same thing here.
Yeah, and that was a really good point, Elsa, is that we have email sequences as well, and our CRM, of course, runs that email sequence. And again, both of us, we know that it's been sent out because it's set up. It's part of our process, and we never have to wonder, oh my God, did I miss that? Oh no, what about that? We don't miss it. I have a saying on my team, and I tell everyone on the team, and if you ask them, they'll tell you this is very much a Cheryl Bailey thing. It's okay to make a mistake, but it's not okay to make it twice. We're all human. We're going to make mistakes, but we are not making them twice. And so you're going to be hopefully in business long enough to make a really crappy mistake. I hope that on you because we all need it. I hope that on you because that's just part of business. Because when you make a mistake, it will cause you to refine your process and rethink it. Like, don't beat yourself up. You're going to lose some money sometimes. It just is what it is. You're going to lose money in business and you're going to make a mistake and you're going to owe something. And when that happens, I hope that you will look at it and go, okay, we made this mistake. We've made it right. How can we make for sure that this never happens again? And then this is a part of our process from now on so that this never occurs to us a second time. So I hope that anytime you ever ask yourself, oh my gosh, did I do that? That you go, oh, that better be part of my process. And anytime there's a mistake from you or your team, that you go, ah, oh, we need to update that process.
Love that. I totally agree with that, Cheryl. I love that saying. The other thing that
And now it'll be an Elsa saying.
absolutely, absolutely. I will duplicate. The other thing that I want to make sure that people remember is the CRM is also your best friend. It is your reminder. So as you're working with your clients, make notes and keep them with the trip. Keep the notes where they wanted to change or deviate or modify. Or if you're asking them if they want to do a particular thing and they say no, or they don't pay. Because remember, we're working with these clients for at least typically a year. And you're not going to remember that they asked to modify that room from this date to the next if you don't have it recorded. So I make sure my CRM, it automatically saves the email. So any emails that go to that client is automatically stored in their trip. As well as if I'm talking to them, I actually use a software system that records the conversation. And then for the contracts, for example, I'll do those over Zoom. By me doing it over Zoom, I can also record the conversation that we're having when we're explaining the contract. And I store that also in my CRM. Again, having a legal background, I'm really, really very tedious about covering my own behind.
Same. I have no legal background and I'm still the same. But yeah, your CRM is really your backbone. It really controls so much of the business. So, and John, I'm looking at the time. I could talk about this all day, but I bet you want us to stop.
Oh, you guys are great. We could go another hour for sure. We've covered a lot of the middle ground today. We're leading up to the part where next week we'll talk about all the little steps from this point through the actual wedding trip itself and the return home. So that's next week. That's Wednesday, September 17th, a week from today, same time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific. And you'll get an email from us. You have some already that have the link to register for the third call, but we'll send you some new ones. You'll get one or two of those. This Friday, we'll send you an email that says the video for today has been uploaded in that special password protected resources page. And you can log in there. It will be later in the day on Friday, but you can log in there, watch the video, or listen to the audio recording. And then there'll also be the typed up Q&A list. I hope you've been typing in some questions for us. We're going to review those this evening, get to work on typing out the answers tomorrow and Friday. Remember, you can also send questions to us, support at our initials, DWHSA.com. And if you get us questions by this evening, we'll be able to get them on Friday's list. But if you think of a question over the weekend coming up, we'll just get it on next week's questions list. And again, we'll tell you after the class is over, there's a special program for you to join. But don't worry, right now, we just want you to absorb information from six of our highest producing members who focus on destination weddings. And before I say a goodbye to our great panelists today, let me remind you, AIC Hotel Group helped us out today putting this together. You'll be hearing from their BDMs as this class wraps up, and rely on them. They're going to be great resources for you. I can't tell you how pleased I am. These are advisors who do very well with their agency. So let's just be honest. There's no reason for them to be here out of an hour out of their very busy days, except for the fact that they're both dedicated to the ideas of agents helping agents. And they started out the way we did. They started out from scratch and built up their businesses. And I hope you're going to follow their example. A big thanks to Elsa Davis, who is the owner of ESD Travels and Signature Weddings Away in New Jersey. Elsa, thank you so much. Great tips today.
My pleasure.
And Cheryl Bailey, the owner of Yellow Umbrella Events in Texas. Cheryl, always just a fount of information and so inspiring to see what you've done with your business. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Thanks, everybody. Remember, support at dwha.com if we can help you. And we will see you a week from today. Thanks again, everybody. Bye.